Hello, this is Richard Dayoub. I'm President and CEO of the Greater El Paso Chamber of Commerce. Welcome back. This is now the new year, so happy new year, happy 2016, and this will be the first edition of the new year's El Paso Primetime. And today, for those of you who've been following our series of interviews, we try to invite guests who are in leadership roles in the community and who usually have something to do or to say that will be important to you, our audience, our listeners. And so we're starting off the new year with a particularly special guest on a particularly important subject, and that is Mr. John Ballou, who is President and CEO of the El Paso Water Utilities and the Public Service Board. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Richard, and Happy New Year. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and be on your show.
Well, thank you for taking the time. We've struggled for a couple of weeks trying to coordinate our schedules together. And before we get into the conversation, under the guise of full disclosure, an important phrase these days apparently, full disclosure and to just simply let the audience know, we have an ongoing relationship. John is has been kind over the last couple of years to commit to serving on the Chamber's Board of Directors. So he is a member of our board, and he is also a personal friend. So with that in mind, then, let's begin with maybe you giving us, the audience, maybe some sort of an opening explanation statement about what's about to transpire and why.
Okay, so what is about to transpire is a rate increase. We're asking for a rate increase for water and wastewater customers and stormwater at the same time. And why that is because our fiscal year starts on March 1, and we have to get our budget approved and adopted in January. So that brings us to this time frame. But I'd like to start off by talking about the water and wastewater budget. And just for everybody's benefit, El Paso Water Utilities is not a corporation. It is a part of the city of El Paso, so we do not make a profit. So then the question is, well, how do you determine how much it's going to cost to charge your customers for the water and wastewater services that you provide? And basically the philosophy is something called cost of service. And this is different from the way electric company and gas companies do their rates. What we do is we start off with what it takes to provide the service. What is it going to cost? And then divide that up in some form or fashion on residential and commercial customers and smaller diameter meters and larger diameter meters. Those are the kinds of nuts and bolts. But we start off with the cost of service. Now, I'll go right into the nitty-gritty of the problem here is El Paso's rates are very low in comparison to whatever metric you want to look at. You want to look at Texas cities, border cities, arid cities, western cities, border cities. But the issue is when you do a cost of service rate, it's how much did it cost in the past and how much is it going to cost you now? Well, in the past, the only cost was pumping the water out of the ground, adding a little bit of chlorine for disinfection, and we put it right into the distribution system. Unfortunately, the aquifer that we've done that with since about 1916 or so, it's not getting recharged other than the artificial recharge that we put into it. There's not enough rainfall here in town. We get about 8 inches of average annual rainfall, but we have 72 inches of evaporation a year. So what that really means is the water is there, was deposited there a long time ago, and it's not getting recharged. So if we move from there and we go to something different, it's going to cost a little bit more. So the first thing that was done different, it was in 1943, when El Paso made an investment. Well, let me put it this way. Someone made an investment to build a treatment plant to take water out of the river. And that entity was actually the United States Army, and that was during World War II. The Army, using the powers that they had at the time, acquired the water rights, built the treatment plant, turned it over to us. And so when that was added to our portfolio mix, it cost a little bit more money because now we have to add chemicals and do some additional treatment. But virtually anything else that we do is going to cost more money, and it's going to cost incrementally more each time we do something because it's difficult. If you want to have a renewable source of supply in El Paso. And I think that whether you use the term renewable or sustainable or water forever, as we once used, it wasn't very popular. But
yes, I remember that.
it kind of means the same thing, that, you know, that at some point in time, you always want to be able to count on water. If you can't, then your community has to go away. And we don't want that to happen. I mean, I choose to live here. I have kids, hopefully grandkids at some point in time. So we need to have a future that includes water in this community. In order to get that, it's going to take a deliberate effort, and it's going to take a focused effort, and it is going to take some additional money.
Well, thank you. I think that's an exceptional starting point for conversation. Actually, while you were speaking, I made a couple of notes to myself. And again, I want to share this in conversation with you because a lot of people don't fully utilize the resources that are available to them or the opportunities to contribute individually, either as a residential customer or as a business, to protecting that limited resource that we have, that non-renewable resource that we have, except by God's blessing from the rainfall we get, and hopefully somewhere in the future we'll start to see rainfalls somewhat similar to what we've had this year, which will maybe put a little bit of a cut into that. But I made a couple of notes to myself. The first I want to touch on, because you were focusing in your conversation about the challenge with recharge. The chamber was involved at the time in a support role with the water utility as they went to Washington to advocate to get funding to develop what is now the world's largest inland desalination plant. And I want to emphasize to our listeners how important that was, not only for the future of water in El Paso, but for the future of our economy, because Fort Bliss, very simply, would not have been designated to be not only a growth installation, but now the largest investment by the Department of Army in the history of all of their installations, with roughly $6 billion, which has done great work for our economy because we have so many jobs related either directly or indirectly to Fort Bliss, with roughly 35,000 soldiers, families, civilians, defense contractors, all of that in play. But maybe just a quick visit about what transpired and how we came about getting this desalination plant.
Okay, yes. It was a very interesting story, and it actually took a long time to put it together. One of the problems that we have here in town when you talk about desalination is, what do you do with the salt that you take out of the water? Because that's essentially what you're doing, is removing salt. And the disposal is a huge issue, and I know it's very difficult for people to conceive of when you have a gallon of water and you're talking about how much salt might be in there. When you have the enormous volumes of water that it takes to supply this community, I mean, in a peak summer day, the community of El Paso uses 160 million gallons. And if you take some fraction of that, in this case, our desal plant is about 27.5, you have 27.5 million gallons per day of water, and that generates 3 million gallons a day of salt water that's the waste product. So step number one was to find a solution to that. And we found that in conjunction with our partners at Fort Bliss, who had already identified the potential of an aquifer that was outside of the wetable zone, outside of our drinking water supply, but that had the capacity to take this large volume of salt water. So that was one of the keys that unlocked it. The other key that you mentioned is the funding. Because again, as I kind of started out to talk about, groundwater just pumping out of the ground, that's one thing. You add a surface water component, that's a little bit more. The third thing we added was our reclaimed water, a little bit more. Desalination is probably about three times the cost of the surface water treatment. So when we added that fourth increment of supply, it was a fantastic opportunity for the communities. Number one is, we're taking a water that was essentially unusable, undrinkable, producing drinking water from it, unlocking the key to development at Fort Bliss, and then also, because of the uniqueness of the situation, recognized by the federal government, we got a lot of money from the EPA and from the Texas Water Development Board, $26 million or so, to build that plant. And that, in the you know, 40 years ago, the government routinely gave cities grants to do these kinds of things. But in the 2007, when that plant was completed, it was almost unheard of for a city to get that kind of money.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And without belaboring it, because we really want to stay on this particular subject that's of concern to everyone, this, coupled with some other funding that came from DOD, has enabled us to do a couple of things. I think you kind of started to allude to it, but because of the process of drawing the water from the Bolson and making it potable, drinkable water, we're also preserving that Bolson because there's less encroachment, is there not, with regard to the desalinated water versus the fresh water that's in there?
That's right. So the fresh water that we have here in the region was becoming increasingly salty. As we withdrew that fresh water, then the salty water from elsewhere, east and northeast of us, was coming in. And so this desal plant at that particular location, the reason it's there is because it allowed us to start intercepting that. So instead of that being a problem, which is contaminating essentially our freshwater wells, we created a resource out of it to provide drinking water to our customers.
I think it's great, and I think you deserve kudos, you and the Public Service Board. Now there are cities from all over the country coming here to visit, see what you're doing, and see what the community is doing, because they're facing big water issues in areas you normally wouldn't think of them as having challenges, and now looking on how they can possibly replicate what you've done here. Is that not correct?
Yes, we've had people from all over the world, from a lot of people from the Middle East. We've had people from Australia, people from all over this country. And in like you mentioned, desalination is something that people are doing because they have unique problems. You have climate-driven things such as the drought going on in California, but you have other utilities in Florida that have a saltwater intrusion issue from the ocean, from the Gulf of Mexico. So there's different reasons why, but at the end of the day, desalination is something that they can use.
So let me pose, first of all, sort of a slash statement question, but I get this all the time. I see it, I read it, I get a little perplexed myself, and I'm, in all fairness, probably a little more informed than most average folks on the street who don't have to deal with this on a daily basis. So whether it's El Paso Water Utilities or El Paso Electric or Texas Gas or the city raising taxes or the school districts passing a bond, you always see or hear on the news. So the cost for this initiative, whatever it may be, will impact the average residential customer by, you know, some minuscule amount of money. And then I look at my house and I say, well, I guess I'm not the average resident. How is this going to affect me? And then I think the logical next question is, how does that impact larger businesses? How does that impact retail? How does that impact industrial? So let's talk about that. Help me understand with this planned increase what that might mean to pick your classification, your rate classification.
Okay, well, I can appreciate that because I've heard the how many Cokes it's going to take and all these other illustrations that people use.
I hope you don't have to pay for that statement.
But when we talk, we use similar analogies. But if you distill down our customer base, really, we have almost 200,000 customers or so. And the vast majority, 95% of those, are single-family residential customers. And that average bill for those single-family residential customers right now is $41.56. And an 11% rate increase, that calculates to $46 per month water bill. The increase per month is $4.52 for the water and wastewater portion of the bill. Now, a business is going to be impacted differently. And the reason I say that is because some businesses, it really doesn't matter what product they have or what kind of service they're providing. If they just have a bathroom and a little coffee area for the employees, it's not going to be that much. But let's say you have a business like a McDonald's or a fast food restaurant on the corner where you have use of water, you're cleaning, you're producing stuff, you have bathrooms for your customer and everything, that average bill at this point in time, about $167. And it will go up by the same 11%. That's $18.17 per month.
Okay. So no matter who you are, let me interrupt you for a second just to understand better and maybe help the audience as well. So irrespective of whether you're a McDonald's or fast food restaurant or if you're a large industrial user, it's still going to be 11%?
That's right.
All right. So if I'm – let's not pick on a particular company, but there are a number of large manufacturing companies or industrial companies here who have a significant use of water. So that 11% could add up to some pretty serious dollars, right?
Yes.
Right.
Tens of thousands of dollars per month.
Right.
Right.
But there's really no way to avoid that. Is that what we're basically communicating? Without some other class, rate class payer picking up the difference.
Well, that's right. And I think that's an important point. And when I started off this discussion by talking about how that 95% of our customers are the single-family residential, whatever you try to do on the industrial is essentially going to have to be spread to those single-family residential customers. Since that's the bulk of our customers, they're the ones who have to bear the bulk of whatever changes we make to the bill or the rate structure.
So let me just add a little footnote to that conversation. One of the discussions we've had with a number of, well, the mayor and the city council, certainly Rolando Pablos with the Borderplex, who's responsible for economic development recruitment, Mr. Weston at the city as well, and the challenges they face is sort of which came first, the chicken or the egg. So if we already know, and this, by the way, is the same challenge, not to the same level you just described, with taxes, property taxes in El Paso, residential community picks up the tab on average, we're about 60%, residential 40% corporate, whether that's commercial, industrial, and that's actually better than it used to be. It used to be more like 75% residential, 25% corporate. Across the state, other major metros, they're the inverse of that. So the large users, the commercial users, so therefore, in this case, the property taxpayers represent about 60 or 65% of the tax base, and the residential, the difference, which is sizably less, making things a little easier for them. So the challenge we face is, as we grow our economy, how do we continue to recruit companies if our, until we do, we face the challenge of the residential still carrying some would argue, an unreasonably large portion of that base, whether it's a tax base or whether in this case it's a rate that you're paying for water. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, it is a problem. I think it's something that we all have to live with. But I think it's more so a problem for us, simply because we have so many single family residential customers. That's the bulk of our customers.
Yep.
And we can't, and since we do things on a cost of service basis, we can't just arbitrarily go to industrial customers and shift burden over to them, because we could be legally challenged for that. We have to treat our customers at least by the same methodology, and that's the nuts and bolts of how this 11% gets spread across the board.
So we have about 10 minutes left in the show. Rather than my dominating the questions and then forcing you to simply answer my questions, are there some key points you'd like to communicate to our audience as we progress through this conversation?
Yes. Okay. So key point number one is we're cognizant of the issues that our customers face. I understand, having lived here my entire life, the affordability issue with El Paso and all of its different pieces. And so what we have tried to do is to ensure affordability. Last year, we made a change in the rate where customers that use 3 CCFs or less of water, which is it's a tough bar, I'll grant you that, but that's 22,000 bills per month, 22,000 customers a month that are taking advantage of that, about 10% of our customers. Those people, their bill actually went down from last year to this year. And even though they're going up 11%, it's still going to be way less than they were paying the year prior to that. So to keep things affordable, that is the accommodation that we made. And the reason we were able to make that is because a lot of what's driving this rate increase is trying to get that next source of supply. And if everybody were using less than 3 CCFs of water, we don't have to go do that. So to the extent that those customers are demanding so little water, we don't have to go buy additional water for them. So that's how that they were able to go down.
So for clarification, and I'm probably like the rest of the audience, explain to me, give me some sort of an analogy, a comparison. What is 3 CCF?
Okay, a CCF is 748 gallons. The problem is when I tell people 3 CCFs is 748 gallons, there's no way I use 748 gallons in the course of a month. Well, you know.
Yeah, you do.
You do. That's right. So 748 gallons, it's about 10,000 gallons per month.
Or less.
Or less.
Those are the ones who actually got their bill to go down.
Got their bill to go down. All right. So for the rest of our consumers, those are the ones that we're having to get this additional source of supply. But we're still not just saying, okay, we'll charge you whatever. So there's two things that we're trying to do to reduce the impact. Three things, actually. As number one is we try to reduce cost as much as possible, improving efficiency of our treatment processes, improving our electric motors, which demand a huge portion of our bill, reducing chemical costs. We have some things that we've done with UTEP, which have reduced chemical costs tremendously over the 20, 30 years that we've been working with UTEP. And we've also, in addition to the desal grant, we also aggressively pursue other funding sources from the Water Development Board, the Corps of Engineers, the Department of Army, BEC, NADBANC, and, you know, the overall amount of money coming from the federal government to any community is going down. But we're still successful in pulling in. We got a $4 point something million grant from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for building a water line in the Upper Valley. So those are the things that we're trying to do to help defer costs going forward into the future. Land sales is another one. We would love to sell some additional land. We need to try to make it easy for developers to buy developable land because that money that comes in offsets any future rate increases.
And by way, clarification, the Public Service Board just can't go out and say, I've got 500
That's
acres.
Right.
I think I'll sell it to you, George, right? It's a very competitive bidding process, and there's just a lot of factors that come into play. And, of course, then the development of that property and some of the restrictions that are set upon those for development, such as the new smart code, et cetera, all come into play in terms of the viability of the sale of those lands. So it's not just a matter of we need another $50 million, let's go sell some land, right?
No, it's complicated. But at the end of the day, we're not interested in speculators coming in. We want the land sold, developed according to the standards that exist for that area, and have a good product for the citizens of El Paso.
Super. Well, thank you for that information. Are there some other key points that you'd like to...
Well, I think our in, you know, like all utilities across the nation are facing the same thing, and we read about it all the time. Our aging infrastructure, and El Paso is no different. The bulk of the water lines in this community were put in the post World War II boom. Okay, so those lines now 50, 60 years old. So that requires another investment in replacing. Underground infrastructure is expensive. You have to dig, you have to prepare the soil, you buy the pipes, you put it in, and all those things are expensive. But it's something that has to be done because, again, you have to have a sustainable water future for the city. And that consists of having the resource, having the infrastructure, meeting your customer growth, and at the end of the day, being able to pay for all that.
Well, I agree with you on all those points. Interesting that you should say that as we're getting close to the wrap-up. I made a note to myself, so I wanted to just point this out. Now, maybe this has happened in my lifetime. I just don't remember it. But here we are with the water utility, Texas Gas, and El Paso Electric all requesting rate increases at the same time, relatively the same time. I don't ever remember a time when that's happened simultaneously. And of course, I realize, but maybe some folks don't, because of statutes, the three utilities can't communicate with each other First of all, you have completely different structures, but you can't get together and say, well, so I think we'll draw straws and I'll go first and you'll go second. It's just simply a matter of demand. And sort of as a side note to your last statement about cost and underground infrastructure, I would offer, and by the way, the chamber itself took some hits over this several years ago, back in, I think it was 2008, when the community decided to go forward and support a formation of a separate stormwater district. But I stand behind that decision, even though nobody wants another bill. The reality of it is, when it was transferred from the city to the Public Service Board, even though we still have a lot more work to do, the improvement that's occurred in terms of managing those floods, now you're doing the work down by the freeway at Copia to get that improved. There's been a dramatic improvement, and fortunately, people no longer losing their property because of a flash flood, because of the work you all have done. So I want to publicly provide you with kudos for that work and communicate to our friends out in the business sector that have had to deal with some of these issues versus permeable ground and the challenges related to that and the costs related to that. But overall, I think we're all better off as a result of it. Do you have any closing thoughts before we end the program?
Well, I think the closing thought is that we're part of the community. We're making an investment in the future of this community. And I think that that's what we want our customers to know. And we're doing it as efficiently and as fairly as we possibly can.
Well, thank you, John. I will tell you that it's been a tremendous learning experience for me to have been a part of the process and to participate in some of the meetings and the outreaches. Of course, it's part of our job at the Chamber to be engaged. I would like to encourage our listeners to make an effort to read more about this, pay attention to what's going on, go to their website, visit their website, and get some of the information off their website. Send in your questions if you can't physically attend any of their outreach meetings. The January 13th is the magic day of the Public Service Board meeting, where the board will vote to institute this proposed increase. That'll be at 8 o'clock in the morning at your offices on Hawkins.
1154 Hawkins.
Right. So with that in mind, again, this is Richard Deyoub with my guest, John Ballou from the El Paso Water Utilities. Final, initial, Happy New Year to all of you. And thank you for your time, John.
Thank you, Richard.